Good morning, Paul. Nice to see you again. Come into the office. Come in. Have a seat. How are you feeling this week?
Oh, Dr. Harbour Surfer. I'm having a rough time at the moment. I just feel like, you know, do I matter? If something happened to me, would anyone care? I don't know if you know, I do a podcast, Doctor.
Right.
Yeah.
I have heard, yes.
Yeah, I do it with a guy called Mike. So if something happened to me, would Mike, what would he do? Would he quit doing the podcast? I'm just worried about that sort of thing.
Look, I'll get Mike in on the conference call and we can ask him just a moment. Mike, what would you do if Paul was unable to do this podcasting anymore? You know, Dr. Herfenstörfner, I think I would probably just get someone else in.
What? You couldn't get someone else in?
Now, Paul, let Mike speak. Let him speak. Mike, who would you possibly get in? Geez, Dr. Herfenstörfner, I would probably get in, I don't know, Chris Franklin. He seems like a smart bloke. You know, good with the words and such. He might be handy.
You can't get Chris Franklin like that. That easy.
Hang on, I'll just dial Chris Franklin into the conference call.
What?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hi, hello, how's everyone?
It's ridiculous! Welcome to DCOCD, the DC Events Podcast, where we are going through every single DC event from Crisis on up and giving it a rating out of 100. And I'm not alone today. I'm joined by Chris Franklin from Supermates and the Fire and Water Network. And what else do you do, Chris?
I do JLU Cast. I do Nightcast, Batman Nightcast with Ryan Daly. So, of course, that's probably most pertinent to what we're going to talk about today. And Superman Movie Minute with Rob Kelly. And, of course, I do Supermates and JLU Cast with my wife, Cindy, which I didn't mention, and I'm probably in trouble now. So, yeah. So I'm all over the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
So, detecting a bit of an accent, what part of England are you from?
Hey, you laugh, but my sister – I'm from Kentucky, but my sister has been doing Ancestry.com research, and we are actually related to the royal family. I am not kidding you. So – You might detect a bit of an English accent. I doubt it, but there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. I should have been at the royal wedding, but I didn't get an invitation. I've been snubbed, I guess. I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah. Oh, well, today on the show, we're going to talk about, something big for Batman, which you have a bit of knowledge in, and it's Nightfall. So, Chris, describe Nightfall to us and who was involved.
Okay, Nightfall was a massive crossover consisting of three distinct story periods that ran through the Batman titles officially from Batman number 492, early May 1993, through Batman Legends of the Dark Knight, number 63, August 1994. The event consisted of the actual Nightfall story itself, detailing Bane's defeat of Bruce Wayne and Jean-Paul Valley's emergence as the new Batman. Nightquest, which itself had two distinct story arcs, The Crusade, which followed Jean-Paul as Batman, and The Search, which focused on Bruce Wayne's pursuit of his therapist, Dr. Sandra, Ken Solving, and Robin's father, Jack Drake, who had been kidnapped. The series wrapped up in Night's End, where the two Batman fought over the title, and at the end, the status quo was more or less returned to. The entire Nightfall storyline ran over 55 comics, not counting the establishing story elements in various one-shots, annuals, and miniseries that led into it. It was inspired by the popularity of lethal heroes who had come to dominate comics and other media in the late 80s and early 90s. The question was, should Batman be as violent and bloodthirsty as these other anti-heroes? And if they are given this kind of Batman, will readers soon want the original back? The creators on it were the big writers were Chuck Dixon, Doug Mitch, Alan Grant, and Denny O'Neill. Artists included Jim Aparo, Norm Brayfogle, Graham Nolan, Mike Manley, Brett Blevins, Tom Grummett, and Jim Ballant. Many other artists contributed, but these were some of the primary ones. Covers were by Kelly Jones, Sam Keith, and Brian Steel Freeze, among others. And it was all edited by Denny O'Neill with a little help from Archie Goodwin on Legends of the Dark Knight.
Wow. It was a big one, wasn't it?
And yes.
One of the things I always struggle with Nightfall, and it's one of those books where it's kind of hard to decide where it actually starts and where it actually ends, because you've got before it, you've got the introduction of John Paul Valley, Azrael, in the Sword of Azrael miniseries. Mm-hmm. And then you also had the introduction of Bane in The Vengeance of Bane. And so, you know, is that where it starts? I mean, it's kind of, if you don't know where Bane comes from or who he is, it's a bit weird just having him show up on the scene and start causing havoc.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. I always thought it was weird that the actual official story didn't start the issue of Batman before where all the Bane releases all the Arkham inmates, because that seems like that's where the actual, you know, I mean, the other stuff, I agree, it's kind of hard to tell even where that started, but it always seemed weird that part one wasn't that, like, Batman number 491. It was just kind of odd.
Yeah. So, were you reading this when it came out at the time?
Oh, yes. I was buying all the Batman titles at the time, and so I was in on it. I bought anything related to Batman, so I wasn't caught off guard, because I think my understanding was a lot of people just kind of ignored Sword of Azrael and Vengeance of Bane one-shots, the one-shot in the Azrael miniseries, and they were kind of caught off guard when when the storyline began in earnest. They're like, oh, wait, you know, I didn't pick that up, and so I think for a while those were hot books because, you know, they had been probably under-ordered and under-purchased by a lot of people, and they were scrambling to find them.
I remember, I think it was in the From the Den columns that Denny actually tipped his hand to say these were important books for something coming up, because I think I bought 3 copies of Vengeance of Bane when it first came out.
Good man, there you go.
Yeah, so was the event surprising to you, where it went and what it did, or do you think it was all sort of telegraphed earlier that this was, you know, we're on the back of the death of Superman, so, you know, it's not, you know, shaking up the characters isn't unprecedented now.
Yeah, I think it did kind of surprise me at the time that they went as far as they did. You know, that we kind of take that for granted now. I mean, our characters are murdered and, you know, they're like literally killed now before us. I mean, Superman was standing, obviously he died, you know, right before this, but, yeah, at the time it seemed like, especially with a human character like Batman, it was surprising that they went as far as they did with it and that they carried this thing out as long as they did over, like, you know, like over a year and several months, this thing strung out. And if you count all the lead up, as you mentioned, it ran for like a year and a half, you know, so it's a long, long storyline. So yeah, it kind of caught me off guard. I assumed that we'd be back to the status quo by the end, but I was starting to wonder there during the Night Quest. It's like, are we ever going to get back to Bruce Wayne as Batman? And I kind of did start to get a little miffed about, you know, having to read Azbats for several months, but, then I saw the light at the end of the tunnel. So,
one of the things I think was a really big deal about this was it was the replacement hero, which we hadn't seen that much of before. Maybe a little bit in the Marvel universe, but I can't think of many instances in the DC universe where someone got replaced, you know, for an extended time like this. Was that one a big deal for you, or what were your big deals with it?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that. I think Nightfall is a great story, and its impact on Batman is we'll get into that, obviously. But I couldn't help but even then feel like this is kind of like the whole Captain America storyline from a few years before with John Walker. You know, I mean, sure, the way that Captain America has to give up his shield and his title is different. I mean, he voluntarily does it. Because the government's basically going to make him a stooge, and so they bring in John Walker, who is this you know, sounds like a good fit for it, but is unhinged and it becomes increasingly more so as the storyline drags out. So, you know, in that respect, it was kind of like, I don't know if there was any, if it was just a coincidence or not, but I couldn't help, since I'd been real involved in that storyline, that I kind of, I've read aspects of this before. That's like the one thing about it. But yeah, it was at DC, you know, Marvel had always, like, you know, especially it's like some of their lame villains and stuff, they'd replaced a lot of the characters, given a, you know, given them a slightly different costume and given them the same name as a guy that had died or something. So, and even with the hero somewhat, but at DC, yeah, unless it was a legacy hero, that didn't happen very often. So yeah, it was kind of shocking.
Yeah, I've never read that Captain America comic series because, well, it's this is DC OCD, not Marvel OCD.
it's good. It's a good. It was Mark Gruenwald at the height of his long Captain America run. I'd recommend it.
Oh, excellent. Shall we talk about what came from this? I mean, when I first conceived this episode, I thought, are we just talking about Nightfall? Are we talking about Night Quest? Are we talking about Night's End? It's probably best just to bundle it all in this chat, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Unless you want me to come back two more times, you know.
So Robin's series sort of launched in the midst of this. We had a Catwoman series going on. What other comics were tied into it?
Well, I mean, you did have the launch of Robin. Catwoman launched in the middle of this. She debuted in toward the back end of the initial Nightfall storyline in her Jim Ballant purple costume with the, you know, the long black gloves and long black boots that Jim Ballant made famous by gluing, you know, two huge volleyballs to her chest. So, and that series debuted during all this, and it ran through Batman and Detective for the most part, especially Nightfall. And then as it got into Night Quest, it pulled in Batman Shadow of the Bat, which was a fairly new title at the time. It pulled it in more often during Night Quest, and by the time you got into Night's End, it was fully engaged in the storyline. And even Legends of the Dark Knight, which had normally been, you know, a series that was not necessarily tied into continuity and was usually set in the past, parts of Night Quest carried over into that, and then Night's End carried into several issues of Legends of the Dark Knight. And even Justice League Task Force, remember that? It got into it.
I remember it well.
Yeah, it was all over. It was mostly contained within the Batman titles, but it did spill over into some of the other DCU titles here and there.
So, which do you think is the strongest bit of it? I mean, are you leaning towards the, you know, the Nightfall or the Quest or the End? Which bit do you think is the most enjoyable part to read?
You know, I think because I am such a fan of the characters that, you know, parts of Nightfall were hard for me to read. And I don't know, I kind of, as much as I enjoyed it, I did have a bit of a problem. This was before Batman was a certifiable nutcase, as he's been portrayed in a lot of in a lot of media and comics since then. I mean, he had been a fairly level-headed character, other than maybe losing it a bit after Jason Todd died, you know. And then that was the whole reasoning for bringing Tim Drake in as Robin, to kind of, you know, temper Batman's anger and balance him out and make him be more careful. And so, you know, Nightfall, Bruce Wayne is kind of, he's not listening to his body. He's worn out. He's not listening to Alfred and Tim, who tell him, go home, take a nap. You can't worry about the Mad Hatter right now, that type of thing. And he just keeps pushing himself. And this is, of course, what Bane wants. Bane has released all the criminals from Arkham to break Batman down, which, you know, doesn't seem very fair, Bane. If you think you're so tough, why don't you just go beat him at the top of his game? You know, that's kind of a Weasley thing to do, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's how I would defeat Batman. That's not how his biggest villain ought to defeat him.
Right,
exactly. It's cheating, basically.
It's cheating, yeah, and he's Mr. Super Pumped Up on Venom steroid guy, you know, so... But, like I said, Night Quest kind of dragged out a little long, and... But Night's End, I think I really enjoyed Night's End because it had a lot of fist-pumping moments. I love that they finally brought Dick Grayson back into the Batman titles. He became a major character in those titles again. They basically saw the train wreck that Titans had become, New Titans had become, and got him back, thank goodness. And, you know, there were some fist-pumping moments where, you know, the fight between Azrael and Azbats and Bruce – as Batman, you know, Dick took it up, and there was like a whole issue of Detective where I'm a big Dick Grayson fan, so a whole issue where Nightwing, who should have been the guy, of course, that would replace Bruce Wayne if he ever needed to be replaced, you know, fought as Bats, and that was really cool. So there were some nice moments in Knights, and I think I enjoyed it most overall.
Yeah, I mean, of all the characters that appear in it, I think Metalhead is one of, you know, the finest, and you know.
Yeah, it's so weird, Metalhead. I mean, it's like they got this guy that, you know, and then they turn around and design, I guess Jim Aparo redesigns Azrael's costume while Batman and Tim are training him, and it looks a lot like Metalhead, and it's like, why does he have such a similar costume? And I don't know if they did it on purpose, because Tim even says, maybe we shouldn't have designed that. Maybe that was a bad influence on him or something. I don't know. It's like, maybe you guys should have just left him in his Azrael costume, which was pretty cool. And of course, as the sort of Azrael was, I think, one of the, I don't know if it was the first, but it was one of the first major projects for some guy who I never heard of again named Joe Quesada, you know, but.
Yeah. Whatever happened to him?
I don't know. I don't think he ever amounted to anything, so.
Yeah, no, for those of you who don't know, Metalhead has, he's basically wearing a gimp suit, and he has, like, metal spikes coming out of his head. Well, on top of his head and now the ears, but they're on long cables. Is that?
It's like a whip. Yeah, with a spike. He like whips his head around. It's like, yeah, it's really
practical.
Yeah, really practical. he'd be a great Hawkman villain. Hawkman could just pick him up, you know, carry him off somewhere and drop him, you know.
Anyway, so and you with Ryan, you do a Batman podcast, and how far till you get to this one, you reckon?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we're going to try to speed the pace up and do two issues in an episode starting soon. So we'll get there closer sooner than we would have if we'd stayed the other course. But yeah, it's a ways off because we still got like 10 Nights of the Beast. We got, of course, A Death in the Family, Lonely Place of Dying. We've got all those. Batman Year 3, of course. We've got all those storylines to go through. We got to try to make it out of the Max Allen Collins run first, though. I don't know, you know.
You're so close to the Brayfogle, though, the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I mean, a little preview. We're getting ready to discuss the very first Batman comic Norm Brayfogle drew. So I was talking about light at the end of the tunnel. There it is. It's the bat signal, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things I'm counting on you guys to do for me is I used to have all these issues and I sold them at some point. But I seem to think there's a letter of mine in somewhere in the middle of Nightfall, and I can't remember which issue. And So I'm hoping you guys can find that for me when you get up to it.
Oh, wow. That'd be great. Yeah. That's exciting. Do you remember what issue you were commenting on?
I can't remember at all. I mean, I used to write all the time, and it was a bit of a crapshoot where you'd get, you know, one letter in, you know, 15 published. So, I mean, I do have some letters in Shadow of the Bat during Night Quest, I think The Search, so you know, when Brian Stelfreeze was on the covers and the costume right. kept getting redesigned. But yeah, that's hopefully something that will be uncovered one day by somebody for me.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll look forward to that when we finally get to it.
Anyway, we'll play your promo now, and then we'll come back for some scoring.
Batman Nightcast, a thrilling new podcast from the Fire and Water Podcast Network, hosted by Ryan Daly
and Chris Franklin. Nightcast chronicles the Caped Crusaders' adventures in Batman and Detective Comics after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Highlights from this legendary era include
Batman number 400,
Legends,
Mike Barr and Alan Davis,
Batman Year 1,
Batman Year 2,
Max Allen Collins, the new Jason Todd, Millennium?
You're not doing this right. Let me take over. Alan Grant and Norm Brayfogle.
Alan Grant from Jurassic Park?
Did you hear me say Norm freaking Brayfogle?
Oh, yeah.
Son of the Demon.
The Killing Joke.
A Death in the Family.
Batman Year 3.
A Lonely Place of Dying.
Alan Grant, Alan Davis, Max Allen Collins. Why are there so many people named Alan from this era of Batman?
The Rise of Tim Drake.
Legends of the Dark Knight.
And that's just up until 1989.
Did anything exciting happen with Batman after that?
You'll have to tune in to find out.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Find it on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Oh, we forgot to mention your favorite issue, when Batman fires Dick Grayson.
You want to find another co-host?
So the way the scoring works is Chris and I, we give four categories out of 10 for eventiness, writing, art and covers, impact and legacy, and that gives us a score out of 80. And to get the last 20, we have a guest scorer who we call semi-OCD, and that's someone who contributes their scores. And today we've got Andy Leyland coming in with his, and he'll give his scores out of 10, and then we halve them, and then we end up with something that is out of 100, if I do my maths right. So, Chris, what do you think about eventiness for this one?
Okay, this might be semi-controversial, but I think I honestly have to go 10 for 10 for eventiness for Batman. Now, if we were going to say the DCU in at large, then it would be a little bit less, but then you have to go by the impact that this story has had. I mean, this story has been adapted, you know, parts of it, the major parts that everyone still talks about, has been adapted into a major, major motion picture, you know. So, I mean, actually, technically, part of it's been adapted into two. One we'd soon forget, But, I mean, the actual breaking of Batman by Bane is in The Dark Knight Rises. You know, this is a huge event. And as far as Batman events, they never topped it. You know, they chased it, but nothing they ever did came close. I guess Hush maybe may have came close, but then nobody really even knows what the hell Hush is about. So so I have to go for 10 for 10 on this one.
Wow. Well, yeah, I'm not feeling that generous. So I mean, I think it's very well done. I actually think I ought to take points off it for being too big. Like it went on for so long, back and forwards between the Bat books. But it never really broke out of those to the rest of the DC universe. I guess that's appropriate in some ways, but you know, if all this weird stuff was happening to Batman, you think one of his mates from the Justice League would check in with him occasionally. So with that in mind, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. I mean, it's very good. It's masterfully done. It's very well coordinated in back and forth. And, you know, the issues did flow, and the changes between teams, you know, is pretty good. But I think by the time it gets to, you know, Night Quest, it's just a bit long in the tooth for it. Like, you really were sick of Azbatson by the end of it.
You were.
You know, and he got a lot of stage time, and you know, yeah, we get the point, we don't like him, he's violent, he's extreme. He outstays his welcome well and truly.
Yes, that's true.
Anyway, so writing. Now, this is, I think some of the writers are really on point with this and some aren't, and there's some fairly goofy stuff in some of it early on. And then some kind of dull stuff later on as it gets past, you know, Batman getting his back broken. I'm going to sort of average it out at, say, 7 for me across all the whole sprawl of it all. I think it's a 7 out of 10 for the writing at this across all that. Where do you land on this, Chris?
I'm not too far away from you. I went 8 out of 10. I gave it a little extra push for being so well planned out because, as Ryan and I have pointed out, in the era we're covering, Denny O'Neill didn't quite have all of his eggs in one basket when he was thinking about continuity and across the two titles. He only had two titles then, but here he's got a real good hold on it. And there is some stories better than others, and you know, you've got three different primary writers and then all these other writers that come in, and O'Neill himself several places. There's some story elements that I think are a little weak. Like, I think Bruce and Chandra Kinsolving like kind of fall in love off panel. I mean, it was one of those things, like one issue, I'm like, wait a minute, when did he start like being in love with her? What's going on? You know, so and then, you know, she's got the Deus Ex Machina super healing power to save Bruce, which is kind of, you know, okay, you go there, but then they leave her like as a childlike vegetable. It's like, well, you could have had a strong supporting character there, you know, and it would have been, you know, for the times, it would have been kind of a little bold of them to have Bruce Wayne, like, actual love interest be an African-American woman, which would have been cool. So I think they kind of dropped the ball in aspects like that.
Didn't she go evil as well?
Yeah, I think, yeah, she kind of, like, her brother, like, her adopted brother was, like, using her to, like, she, like, their, like, mental powers kill the whole village in England or something, and But she was like under, and she may have come back later as evil. I can't remember. I know she regressed to like a childlike state at the end. And that was kind of a, you know, she was like the, just the MacGuffin that to chase around, and they didn't develop her very well, in other words. But other than that, I mean, I got to give it credit for the sprawling story. It may have sprawled too long, as you said, but they had this all really well planned out. And for the most part, it holds together pretty well.
Awesome. Okay. What do you think of the art and the covers?
Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I would go 8 out of 10 on the art. There were tons of artists on this one, but several primary artists who contributed many pages and covers on this. Unfortunately, you get some of Norm Breyfogle's last regular Batman work. He left and went to the Ultraverse shortly after Nightfall began, but it's still great in the beginning to see his Batman. Jim Aparo officially retired with Batman number 500 after drawing the character for almost nonstop for 20 years. I mean, that's nuts.
Wow.
His art wasn't quite as strong at the end, but he's still one of the all-time great Batman artists. So any Jim Aparo Batman is good Batman to me anyway. Like we said, Joe Quesada kind of got his start here. Kelly Jones got his start on Batman doing the covers. I was a real big fan of Graham Nolan's take on Detective Comics. I really liked his Batman. It was all, you know, Mike Manley and Brett Blevins. They later went on to do a lot of animation stuff. It was all solid to great stuff. You know, one thing I want to point out about the art and covers, too, is I really enjoyed the trade dress because it was really well thought out. Like you know, it said Nightfall up in the top, and it would have the bat signal, the rounded bat symbol, which looks like the bat signal. And slowly it became eclipsed as Nightfall went along to the point where it was like red when Bane broke Batman's back. And then when Night Quest began, you had the new Azrael bat symbol in the corner. And then as Night's End started, that started to shatter and the pieces fell away on each cover to reveal the original bat signal again. So I thought, as a graphic designer, I thought that was really cool.
I like the art. I must admit, I was a Philistine when this came out, and I hadn't been reading comics that long, and I just didn't get Jim Aparo at the time. I thought his style was sort of, it looked anachronistic to everything else that was going on at the time. It just felt a little bit dated. I mean, now I am, you know, I'm a well-rounded, mature person, and I understand that I was an idiot back then. And, yeah, I did like the covers and the trade dress. But, yeah, I'm almost where you are. I'm giving it a 7. 7, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I had the same feeling with Jack Kirby, you know, when I was a kid, when I was young, reading comics, you know, at first. And then it clicked in my head one day, so I understand.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you don't understand fine cuisine until you're, you know, eating a lot more meals sometimes.
True.
Now, for Impact and Legacy... I think this is a good one. I mean, it really did some big stuff that stuck around. Like, you've got Bane. Bane's become probably one of the biggest Batman villains this side of the Joker now. It took a long time for people to start, you know, to see the potential of Bane and take it seriously. I mean, he had that terrible appearance in Batman and Robin, the movie, where he was just basically a wrestler. What was he? He was a muscle for Poison Ivy, wasn't he?
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was very strange. He looked like a balloon, too. It was really weird.
But Christopher Nolan definitely changed that, and Bane's appeared in the cartoons, and, you know, mark my words, we've not seen the last of Bane in live action, and he's a really big character, and, you know, he's had different takes. He's been around long enough that they've done interesting things with him, like his stint in the Secret Six, where he was honourable, very socially awkward, but, you know, quite vicious. It was, you know, Gail Simone did some really good stuff with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely, he's a character that has endured and lasted and been added to the Batman mythos. What else came from it in your experience?
Well, you know, as Azrael, he actually, you know, stuck around quite a while. He got his own title eventually, and you can kind of even look that Nightwing. You know, he came back to the Batman family. He shortly after this became Batman for the first time. In the Prodigal storyline, because Bruce, as soon as he got back, he participated in Zero Hour and then said, yeah, I got to take a break. And he left Dick as Batman for a while, and then after that wrapped up, they eventually did a Nightwing one shot where he brought Alfred back because Alfred had quit working for and with Bruce because he was going back to be Batman after he got healed, and then they did a Nightwing miniseries, and Nightwing got his own series. So you can kind of see the events of Nightwing getting his own book came out of Nightfall, and of course Robin and Catwoman, they got their own books during Nightfall, and those three characters have pretty much had a monthly presence in one form or another ever since then. You know, they've had a title. I mean, whether it was, of course, Tim Drake gave way to Damian, he has had a monthly presence in a Batman and Robin title or Super Sons or something. It was kind of a precedent setter for those characters too. So yeah, there was a lot that came out, and yeah, I don't think you can overestimate how much, like you said, Bane. I mean, it's and Bane is definitely open to interpretation from, you know, luchador Bane to, you know, mumbling Scottish accent Bane, you know, so it's he's all over the map, but it's still Bane, and there's still aspects of him that are the same. So yeah, he is definitely, and I'd say Bane is probably one of the more recognizable comic book villains now. You know, I mean, even beyond some of the more DC's more long-term villains that had a longer history, he's kind of, you know, leapfrogged over them. A lot of the general public who's never picked up a comic, they know who Bane is, mostly thanks to Dark Knight Rises. But yeah.
Yeah. So I'm 8 on Impact and Legacy. What are you giving it?
I am going to blow the doors off this one too, and I'm going to say 10 because of Bane. Yeah, I know. I'm going high, but I think this is. If you ask me about what the eventiness of like Legacy or even No Man's Land, I would say it was a lot less, but the impact and legacy of Nightfall is just—it's all over. I mean, you can't basically think of the history of Batman without including it. It's just as important to Batman as the death of Superman is to him, I think.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's hear from our semi-OCD, Andy Leyland.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for inviting me to talk about Batman Nightfall, which is my all-time favorite crossover event. It isn't the best. I think that the death of Superman is probably slightly better than it in terms of it being largely the first event of this kind. And I think No Man's Land is better constructed overall than Nightfall. But Nightfall is certainly one of my favourites, largely because of where I was when it hit and the impact that it had, and also that it was about something. For ages before Nightfall started, which was in early 1993, I think, Denny O'Neill had been getting loads of letters into the Batman letters pages of the books, Batman and Detective Comics, at that time, saying, why does Batman not kill? Make Batman darker, make Batman grittier. Because, of course, this was the era of the Punisher becoming an incredibly popular character, and Spawn was just debuting, and all of that. And Denny decided to tackle this question head on. Why don't you make Batman grittier? By giving them exactly what they wanted. By giving them a darker, grittier Batman in the form of Jean-Paul Vallée. To do this, obviously, they had to have a good reason for why Bruce Wayne wasn't Batman anymore. And the brainstorm between the different writers who were involved in it, which was an awful lot of people, as you normally expect for a crossover of this event, but the primary architects, in addition to editor Denny O'Neill, was Chuck Dixon, Alan Grant and Doug Mensch, who were all writing the main Batman books at the time. And they came up with this rather expansive storyline that crossed over into a lot of issues, but primarily only Batman, really. You know, the Nightfall stuff didn't really go into the other titles over much, other than cameo appearances, guest appearances in other titles. It isn't like when Blackest Night would come around and Geoff Johns conceived Blackest Night as a Green Lantern story and Dan DiDio said, let's make it an event. Nightfall really stayed confined to the Batman titles, and even though it was primarily Batman and Detective Comics, the other two Bat books, Shadow of the Bat and Legends of the Dark Knight, tended to stay out of the way, at least in the early days of the storyline. So overall, I think Nightfall is my all-time favourite crossover because it is about something. It is tackling that idea of why Batman doesn't kill, why Batman isn't as dark and gritty as perhaps we would have liked him to be in the 1990s. So, to answer your questions as to the various different eventiness, writing, art, covers, legacy, impact, and all of that gubbins, and what kind of event that it is, I think that for eventiness, this must get at least 9 out of 10. It probably isn't peak eventiness, like say, Blackest Night, which crossed over into the whole of the DC line, whether it warranted it or not. But at the time that this was done, there was really only the death of Superman as a template for what it was doing. This idea that this was a big storyline that was going to run for quite a few years across many, many titles and needed a lot of coordinating. So I think Nightfall is very definitely 9 out of 10 on the event in a scale. It was only the second time that this had really happened, and obviously going on from this, it would be something that would become more and more eventful, I was going to say. More and more frequent, that's the word I'm looking for. And to, you know, lesser and varying degrees, the less we say about something like Maximum Carnage is probably the better. But in terms of 90s, early 90s, eventiness, 9 out of 10. The writing is difficult. When you've got so many different writers with so many different styles essentially contributing to the same story, there are going to be bumps in the road, speed bumps in the road that make you slow down a bit. Chuck Dixon, by and large, embraced this whole idea, ran with it, and did some really interesting and fun stories tackling what the replacement Batman, Jean-Paul Valley, would really be like. Doug Mensch went more for the psychological edge, as did Alan Grant over in Shadow of the Bat. So the writing could be, perhaps, a little bit uneven. But the fact that Denny O'Neill was able to pull this off as the editor of all of the books as well as he did, I think deserves more credit than perhaps it's given. So I think for the writing, I think we would have to go 8 out of 10 with Nightfall. It is very 90s. There are some very 90s tropes in there. I can't believe I just said the word tropes. But for the most part, it's quite a gripping and interesting story being told, because they do have an idea of what they're doing with it. Art and covers. A lot of the covers for Nightfall were handled by Kelly Jones in the early period of it, which they also used as the house ads at the time, appearing in other comics, promoting that whole thing about, you know, brilliant tagline the adverts had for Nightfall. Batman is going where he's never been before. Away, all of that stuff was up, and then they would have those adverts every month counting down. Bane is loose, this is happening, and in the shadows Bane waits. All of that stuff was absolutely brilliant, and all of that played on the very moody and evocative artwork of Kelly Jones. So the early days, the covers when Kelly Jones was doing the initial Nightfall covers and Joe Quesada's cover to Batman 500, all absolutely brilliant stuff. As it went along, I think some of them weren't perhaps as good as they could have been. But again, that's the nature of the beast when you're talking about a major crossover event covering as many titles as this one did. It covered quite a lot of books overall, running from April 93 to January 95, if you want to include Prodigal as part of the overall Nightfall storyline, which I kind of think you should. It doesn't really feel complete without Prodigal. It feels a little bit rushed without Prodigal, ending just in one episode of Legends of the Dark Knight. But overall, I think the art is consistently good, sometimes brilliant, sometimes average. Jim Aparo was not perhaps at his best when he was working on Batman. I think, you know, his best days as an artist were behind him, which is quite sad. But some of them, particularly Batman 497, which is the big Broken Bat episode, I think the art in that is a little bit stiff. But on the other hand, you've got the brilliant covers of Kelly Jones, which really do sum up the series. But you've also got some excellent art in there. You've got Barry Kitson doing some work. Graham Nolan is doing some brilliant work. Robin has Tom Grummett on the art duty. So some of the artwork is great. So I think we'll have to go 7 for the art. And if I can judge the covers separately, I think the early Kelly Jones ones, I think they'd get 8 just for creating a uniform look to the whole thing. The impact and legacy of Nightfall is quite interesting. Sorry about that beep, the smoke alarm battery's running out. It's quite interesting. For a long time, it seemed that Nightfall was lumped in with all those 90s events that perhaps didn't really have a point and ran on too long, you know, like the Clone Saga, and I'm sure you can all think of others that match that criteria. Over time, like the death of Superman, Nightfall has been more appreciated with the passing of time, and the fact that it still continues to get reprints, you know, in addition to big collections. I think there's two or three softcover collections. Shut up. There's also the omnibus editions. It's getting another reprint as I speak, upcoming solicitations of Nightfall Recut or something like that. So I actually think overall its impact and legacy has been quite profound and quite interesting. And it did show that, you know, maybe only Bruce Wayne can be Batman, and there is a reason that Batman doesn't kill and isn't as gritty as perhaps you'd want him to. I'm kind of tempted to give it 10. Certainly in the Bat sphere, it provided the template for many crossovers that followed. And I think only No Man's Land bettered it. Everything else kind of suffered a little bit. Only No Man's Land came together perfectly. So I think that I would have to give that a 10, to be honest with you. So you've now got what types of events was Nightfall. It was a fixer. It did adjust continuity slightly in that it introduced Jean-Paul Valley to the Bat books. And essentially he had his own title for a long time after Nightfall. So there's another element of its legacy. Robin got a book on the back of Nightfall. So there's a legacy. I think, did Birds of Prey follow Nightfall as well? So that's quite important. So it did change the role of the characters involved. It was an occupier. It gave related comic titles a good story to tell. It did launch new books and give new ideas. Essentially, I think Nightfall is where Tim Drake comes into his own as Robin and essentially created the fan base that he has to this day. I don't necessarily think it was a vanity project. I do think it was something that they felt needed addressing because of the amount of readers that were asking for it. So there you go. Thank you very much for thinking of me for Batman Nightfall. It is, as I said, one of my all-time favourite Batman stories. I think it's very underrated in many respects because it is judged as one of those 90s over-the-top things, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. A lot of it's well-written, a lot of it's well-drawn, and unlike other crossovers of this kind, I didn't feel it overstayed it well. It's welcome. It felt like it ran just long enough. Best of luck with the show, and thank you very much.
The Long Halloween, Hush, Dark Knight Returns, The Killing Joke.
These are all Batman stories that have been talked about and talked about countless times over the years.
They are considered classics, and in most cases, that title is fitting.
The thing is, Batman is nearly 8 decades old, and whilst those stories are worth talking about, there are plenty of other Bat comics that are being a tad overlooked.
And that's where we come in. Hi everybody, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Andrew Leyland.
Andy and I decided that it was a crime that there were so many great Batman stories out there that weren't getting their due.
To that end, we started a show, the Overlooked Dark Knight, a non-index index show.
Our goal is to talk about the previously mentioned overlooked stories and tell you why they're worth your time.
The show comes out twice a month, with the first episode focusing on the Bat books from the late 70s and early 80s. We're starting with the Len Wein run and working our way forward through the books written by Jerry Conway and eventually Doug Mensch.
On the second episode of the month, we'll dig into the various adventure comics that were based on the Fox Kids / Kids WB Batman animated shows because they're really good and hardly anyone seems to remember that they exist.
The show can be found at the Fortress of Baileytude Podcasting Network, which is located at www.fortressofbaileytude.com.
The Overlooked Dark Knight, the non-index index show.
Shining a bat signal on the bat stories that no one seems to remember or care about.
Because somebody has to.
All right, thanks, Andy, for that. So it's time to do the maths. So hold my hand, Chris. This is going to be tough for me.
Okay.
So you gave it 36. I gave it 29. Andy gave it 34, but we halve him down 17. So let's add all those together. So it looks like, my goodness, it's 82. 82.
Wow.
82 is exactly the same as what we scored The Death of Superman.
Oh.
So, whoa, it's our first tie.
Wow. See, they were just as, I just said that, they were just, was just as important to to Superman as it was to Batman. So there you go.
Oh, golly. I don't know what to do in the case of a tie, but here we are. Wow.
They're going to have to duke it out. Like, we're going to have to rewatch Batman v Superman and see who wins. That's... And nobody wins. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Oh, man. It's the Martha. It's the Martha slug out. There you go.
So at this point in the show, we usually do feedback. I don't think we've got too much feedback. We did get a really lovely message from Mark Lundberg, who's Susan Lundberg's, I presume, partner. Maybe they got the same name. They could be husband and wife. But he basically said, I'm not much of a podcast listener. I've tried several, but I haven't found many I've enjoyed just listening to. Gave DCOCD a try after they asked Susan to contribute to the newest episode, and I'm enjoying it very much so far. Nice job to us. So, thank you very much, Mark. I think that's all we've really gotten the feedback. I mean, we are recording this fairly early after the last episode, so it's a bit early. So, all right, Chris, what are you up to in your podcasting next?
My wife Cindy and I continue to do JLU Cast, where we cover the Justice League animated series one episode at a time. Ryan and I are doing Batman Nightcast. Of course, we are past when Jason Todd's new origin has been told. We're into the Max Allen Collins run on Batman. We're in Batman Year 2 with Detective Comics, and that's where Todd McFarlane has taken over. Mike W. Barr continues. So it's like we said, it's kind of a mixed bag, but we are coming up soon on the Alan Grant, John Wagner, Norm Brayfogle run on Detective. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to getting past some of these kind of dubious comics. And Superman Movie Minute is doing specials right now. But we had a pretty big get here recently. And by the time this airs, I think this episode will be out. But we recently talked to Richard Donner. Rob and I got to talk on the Skype to Richard Donner. I mean,
wow.
I know. I couldn't believe it while I was even talking to him that Richard Donner was like going into my earphones directly, you know, and I was having a conversation with him. It was amazing. I was stupefied the whole time, pretty much, which is one reason why Rob did most of the talking, but but he was great. Just as if you've ever seen Richard Donner in interviews or anything, he's super down to earth and funny, and he was just the same way when we talked to him. He's just a great guy to talk to, and it was a highlight of my geek life for sure.
Awesome. My family just watched Scrooge last night, so.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
A bit of a Richard Donner week.
Nice. Wow. Yeah. And with Karen
Allen.
Did
he say that he, sorry?
With Karen Allen. Yeah, yeah. Rob's favorite. Yeah.
Did he say that he listened to the show ever?
No, I don't think he'd heard of us before, but. But, you know, that's okay. I don't think Richard Donner probably listens to a lot of comic related podcasts. He might listen to podcasts. I don't know. But, you know, he probably doesn't listen to a lot of comic related podcasts. But he was nice enough to give us a little promo. So, you know, he knows who we are now. So there you go.
Well, that's excellent, Chris. Okay, well, I think that's probably all we're going to do now. So, yeah, Nightfall Down. So, yeah, next time, I think when we come back for DCOCD, well, Chris, you won't be with us, which is good for you, but I think we're going to do Bloodlines.
Oh, whoa. No offense, I'm glad I got in on Nightfall.
Well, thanks very much, Chris, and thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you, hear you all, talk to you, well, we'll be in your ears next time on DCOCD. Thanks very much.
Bye. Bye, Paul. Ah!